Welcome to Story Talks, where we discuss the practices that engage, motivate, develop, retain, and attract people to businesses. We'll give you principles and tools based on real-world stories to leverage listening and storytelling to become a better leader and management professional. Story Talks is produced by Narrative, a company that focuses on personal storytelling for business.
So a couple of years ago, I worked with an executive at Prudential, and we were preparing to present at a summit with I think 500 people as an audience plus 1,000 who were streaming, and the whole topic of the conference was financial wellness, and so I worked with a few executives to prepare them for this presentation. So one of the presenters at Prudential also was speaking on the topic of financial wellness, and when I asked him, you know, I asked everyone to think of a personal story that connected them to this topic. And so we kind of looked at the values that underlie financial wellness, and their big thing was that, you know, the definition of financial wellness is very open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we never really know when someone is quote unquote financially unwell. Mm-hmm. And we sort of assume that because you're homeless, well, that's an indication that you're financially unwell. But actually, the point that they were making at this conference and wanted to make is that people who are financially vulnerable are everywhere, that they are in our workforce, they're in our schools, and essentially living from paycheck to paycheck, and they're one paycheck away from not having a home, not being able to buy another meal for their kids, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And yet they are functioning members of society, mm-hmm. and you would never know that that was the case. And so the argument was, you probably have someone like this in your life. And we at Prudential want to make sure that we are not just catering to the wealthy, and those, but that we are actually going to the financially vulnerable via the corporations that we serve, such as Walmart and other big, mm-hmm. Walmart was one of the examples they used. And so then Matt, when asked, you know, what's a personal story that connects you in that way, where mm-hmm. someone that you know was financially vulnerable, but you didn't necessarily realize it until something happened. And he mm-hmm. thought of his father, because his father had put 4 kids through college and had his own janitorial company. Mm-hmm. And then one day, literally from one day to the next, his only client, which was a big factory, was bought out by a competitor. And then they restructured. And as a result, Matt's father's company no longer serviced them, and so lost his only client, and then had to close shop. So suddenly in his 50s, he's looking for a job, and he has zero in his retirement account. And so he finally does find a job after a year of looking in a warehouse. And 3 years into this job, he's got retirement, you know, he starts to save for retirement. A little chunk of money goes into a retirement account. And after 3 years, he falls off a ladder, 11 feet, and completely, his body goes in complete shock. And he's not paralyzed or anything like that, nothing life-threatening, but he's definitely not able to go back to work, months of physical therapy. And after a few months, his savings account dwindles down to zero again. So he finally gets back on his feet. And you know, now he's close to 60, and he has a high school degree, and that's it. And now he's got to find another job. And he finally does. And he becomes the head of security for the high school that all of his 4 kids went to. Wow. And now he's on his way to building his retirement savings account again. The thing that Matt did during that presentation was, you know, first of all, when he came up with that story, one of the first things that he said was, I'm really afraid that I'm gonna cry in front of this audience and in front of my colleagues and, mm-hmm. and everyone else. And, you know, because it's a very emotional story for me. And I said, well, what would be the problem with that? And he said, well, you know, am I going to be able to get through the story? Are people going to be interested in the story? Will they, you know, be uncomfortable if I'm emotional? And we talked through it and, you know, we got to building this story together and he decided that what was more important was connecting with the audience in a genuine way. And of course he was also encouraged by his colleagues, his boss, you know, and other people that were in charge of this conference. And then he told the story and he did choke up a little bit and he got emotional, he got through the story. And when he did get emotional, I was in the audience, and really, this is not an exaggeration. Everyone leaned in. I looked around mm-hmm. and they were mm-hmm. literally leaning in as he told that story. And even as he took a pause and swallowed hard and his voice started to fray a little bit, mm-hmm. even when that happened, exactly when that happened, people leaned in because mm-hmm. they wanted to know what was going to happen next because they were mm-hmm. really into the story. And what he did was weave in statistics and data about the financially vulnerable, that his father wasn't alone, that actually millions of people have $0 in their savings account and are just a few months or years away from retiring. And so he was able to kind of highlight this crisis of retirement in the US through a very personal story. He got vulnerable. And then what he said afterwards was that it was one of the best speaking experiences that he'd ever had. And that most leaders, the way that he saw it anyway, in corporate America, and I guess a corporation like, you know, top 50, like Prudential, is that leaders tend to be stoic and mm-hmm. stick to like a three bullet point PowerPoint mm-hmm. deck. That's what he said. And that we can actually be a little more genuine and connect to our real experiences, and that the payoff is greater. So that was something that when we talk about vulnerability in the business field, that, you know, a lot of times there's this misconception that, you know, it's kind of like, what am I going to look like? And there's a fear of going more personal because we think that people are going to leave the room or be uncomfortable, but actually it's our own discomfort that mm-hmm. comes up. And if you get through that, and you are able to put the judgments aside, then it's, the payoff is really great.
That is a beautiful story. And I've heard you share versions of it, but every time you share it, it is another layer of the experience. Now, this time you shared it, you were in the room mm-hmm. and watching the happenings. And I love that description about when he got choked up, when people mm-hmm. leaned in. They want to hear what's that, but it's also protective saying, right. because I think everyone identified that could be me, and is he going to be okay? And he's taken on a lot of to leave himself open. Mm-hmm. My experience is a little different. And I had been asked at a conference to facilitate a mini panel, three people. Myself was going to be the facilitator and two individuals that were friends in their corporate life. One woman who is Asian American, and she was first generation and had moved high up in her industry to her level. And then her friend who is he had worked at different corporate levels and then he's an entrepreneur. So true to my form, we organized, I ran some questions and scenarios beforehand. And then when we hit the stage, they went rogue. So they just did. Well, this gentleman got up and walked around, and I was like, I've lost control of my two colleagues here. Mm. And then the woman got up, walked to the side, and I only could do one thing. Is I was like, okay, the audience is looking at me. They're going to say, how is she going to handle this situation? Because first of all, I have to explain, I was on this chair that I was stretching to look visible because I kept sinking into the chair they gave me on this thing. But when I looked at the audience, I realized in that situation, they were bantering back and forth of what it was to be a woman and moving up to the level she was at. And I then started to talk to the audience, almost like it was a therapy session, because he would interrupt her, she would push back, he was doing some stereotypical behaviors, and I would comment on. Now, what I'm leading up to, where it changed the tenor and tone of the situation, was 20 minutes into their discussion, she talked about what she had to do to succeed, to go to school, what it meant for her mother and her parents, and the fact that she was carrying the responsibilities of her family on her shoulders and what she meant to her family and the communities. And then she would tell all of us about what it meant when she met people, when she went to conferences and they saw somebody that looked like her taking a leadership role. And at the same time, she shared, she had just taken a new role at another company. And she talked about people coming and calling her and saying what a difference she had made in their life, and that she's been a source of inspiration and guidance and mentorship. And she proceeded to burst into tears on the stage. The gentleman who is her colleague didn't quite know what to do in the beginning, but he did a smart thing. He didn't shut her down. He just stood next to her. And I watched the room change, because it went from joking and vulnerability and me kibitzing with the audience to say, look at these behaviors. What are we going to do about them? Are you taking all this, to shifting? And that was, and to learn that in real time, to say to myself, hold, let things happen, and let what just was shared be experienced by everybody. And it was a compelling moment, because people start to talk afterwards in the room and ask questions, like the Q&A. It started to create this beautiful energy afterwards, where people sharing experiences and acknowledging what it, where this one key person made a difference. But it wasn't that moment of unplanned, it came out of left field. She hadn't processed the fact that she had left and left a huge chunk of her life back. She literally had gotten on a plane to come to this conference, and she showed up as herself. And it was okay, because so many women think, well, you have to put this veneer on and show that you're all in control. And she was shocked, but it ended up being the most compelling thing that she could have done. Right. And the most, and funny enough, like in the next day when I met other people in sessions, they were still talking about it from a very respectful way, that we had created this unintentional energy that was real and was beyond any statistic, any flow chart about here's what we need to do for women. She really showed where life changed for her and for others in a spontaneous way. So that's my story. And I hadn't thought about it in a while, but you reminded me when you were talking about that moment on the stage where we have to lose control to let something happen and let the magic, the right thing's going to happen.
Slightly
terrifying when you're looking at 500 people thinking, okay,
but
it was worth it. And it was special. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk to these folks like we're at one table. And I think that's something that when I work with people speaking, that we have to think about, just be still and let things happen.
I wonder if the if after that, the woman who burst into tears, obviously that's not a, as you said, it's an unintentional thing. But what did she comment on things later on in terms of that experience, or was it?
We talked afterwards, and she was surprised, because if you look to her stance, she's cool and like the leather jacket on and all, like, so it wasn't, it was surprising, because it felt a little out of context in how the demeanor she presented. But she said, I guess there was more to me invested in experience that I hadn't realized. And she was appreciative. She goes, I'm glad it happened. Yeah. And I think what it felt like, and what she was getting comments is like, if people respected her talent before, they respected her even more that she had done mm-hmm. that. And in the audience, just to give you a sense, it was all chief executives, it was chief procurement officers and technology people and a lot of sales, but she showed up as she was and it just happened. But telling somebody where something made an impact in your life and being true to it was different. So that little bit of sharing really opened up a door to something was more memorable than what it would have been about, like, okay, I got promoted and this is great. And now I moved on to a bigger job. Nobody would remember that.
Yeah. It's so great because there's so much contained in there in terms of, how can I approach this myself? If I'm an executive who has, an experience, and I would venture to say that if you're a human being, we all have experiences that are more personal that can be shared in a business context in order to make your point, to make yourself more memorable, to get people to act on anything. And there's so much that's contained in that story you told, because the one thing that I wrote down was the word family, because it feels like in both the anecdotes that we talked about, that's where people went, like those moments of impact, those moments of emotion. Our families are such a rich source of material. And I think that's one of the first things that happens when we go into business at a certain level, is that we kind of leave that to the side. Mm-hmm. And family is the time that we have for, before and after work. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, we kind of leave it out. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, to me, one of the things that I would encourage everyone to do, and always encourage people to do, is to look, when you do look within, look for that context in your family, look for those dynamics, because it's often a very accessible source for stories, as opposed to, well, let me see if I had something that happened in my career or an interaction with a boss, or, which, is fine too. But I would venture to say that it may not be as easy to get to as something that happened in your family. And then, of course, it's a bit of a risk, like you were just saying, which is also contained in that anecdote, is that you are taking a risk and by sharing something of yourself that way. But then the third point is that the payoff is great, because what I got from this is that it really made her human. That the way her demeanor, et cetera, suddenly it kind of goes out the window. So all the assumptions you had about a person before they shared this thing about themselves, they melt away. And whether those assumptions were positive or negative, it's almost beside the point, because now all you remember is that story. And that's ultimately the positive thing that's going to make you want to do something about what it is that she was trying to communicate about. And so again, I think there's a theme in the way we talk about things, you and I, where, this seems daunting, this seems, for other people, or I'm not that person, but actually, you are, because we all are. We all have access to these experiences, because we've all had them. And they're not that, they're not far away from us. We're not that far removed. And then when we do access them, our audiences are far more, tolerant than we think. Mm-hmm. We really think that suddenly, these people that we talk to every day, or that we sell to or buy from, that they become these like robotic tyrants that, don't have any feelings and run away from feelings. But actually, it's completely untrue. And it's totally in our heads, So
that's why, backstory and context, I think, are such game changers. I mean, you mentioned family. I think another rich source of stories to connect are teachers and even coaches in people's lives. So that one teacher who figured out a way to see past behaviors or see talent that we didn't see in ourselves and push and encourage. So I think those can be compelling stories to use. And I use them in my work as well as encourage other people to do that. And use it to dig in, to go through some of their school history and see where was a favorite teacher or what did they find was engaging about, and figure out a way to use some of those stories to get people to have some relatability about what it is. Because when you're in school, you're problem solving, you're learning, you're being vulnerable. Like, it depends what ages you're operating on. And there can be some fun lessons to do it. So, and humor, because we talked about things that made people cry, but then there's also things that make people laugh, and how we processed our information and what we found fascinating. So I think it's finding the context. I remember having one nun in grade school. She was determined to get us all to sing together on cue, and she wrote, and I still remember, it's been a long, long time, but triumph is try is the first syllable, and triumph is try. But I that woman owned, she deserved a place in heaven, because we were just the worst.
You're not going to sing for us today.
No. But it was like 100 unruly kids of all levels, and she was on a mission that somehow she was going to get us to line up and make something happen. So it's those teachers that stay with us the whole life.
Order
and chaos.
It's such a great point, because I think it's, you know, that's a relationship, right? And you know, all these relationships that we have throughout our lives, and you know, that's, you're right, it's a great source of stories as well, you know, and they can be outside of our families. And the other great point you made is that you know, we don't, and I'm glad you made it, because it was something that occurred to me, is that, oh, people are going to think that, you know, the goal is to cry on stage and, you know, or on Zoom or whatever. And it's not, you're right. You know, there's many ways to deliver a story. And I think the point is more about being genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't manufacture how that's going to happen. And I think what you said earlier, you know, you're kind of, it's that moment where you're no longer necessarily in tight control. So what's nice about storytelling is that it gives you a sense of control in terms of the narrative, because you know where you're going to start, what your middle is, and what your end is going to be. Before you tell the story, you know what it's going to be. But what you can't control, and what creates magic, is how you respond yourself in the moment to the story you're telling. Mm-hmm. And I think that whenever there's emotion involved, what it shows the audience is that you're truly connected to what it is that you're talking about. And whether that's because you're crying or laughing or whatever, or even just a slight inflection, or, I mean, I remember one person, we were working with a bunch of engineers managers, you know? Yeah, and so there was many of the presentations were just not, you know, or at least that's what they came in with, the assumption about themselves, actually. They were saying this about themselves. We're engineers, we don't, you know, we don't present, we don't emote, we don't, et cetera, et cetera.
Lots I worked with tons of engineers.
But I remember this one person who was a fly on the wall during the whole workshop, you know, was the person who was chosen by his group to present to the rest of the group what they had come up with. And the reason was that he had a personal experience that was related to the topic. And so, you know, another one of our principles is, if you're the one with the story, you should tell it, not somebody else. And so he did, to his credit, and kind of got, you know, very shy, but did it. But as he told the story of something that happened to him, his whole body language, you know, he didn't cry, he didn't laugh, he didn't emote in particular, but his body language was so different. He was suddenly very animated, very enthusiastic, and really not the fly on the wall we had seen during the entire workshop. And his colleagues were all surprised. They're like, wow, this is like another person, you know? And not, again, that it's, you know, it's wrong or right to be a certain way, that was the right way to be. No, it's just that he was authentic because he had connected to something real. And now it changed his demeanor. It showed something else to his audience. And again, they leaned in, you know. So I'm glad you brought up that point because it's true. It's not about, you know, we want you to cry or do something like that.
I know.
It's more about connecting with something real.
And it's true because I worked with a lot of situations where a lot of introverts, and they sometimes will say like, I don't bring value or I don't talk up. And there's a whole art and science I work with about how to teach people how to work in the meeting to raise their voice or weigh in. Cause I think introverts are amazing. They will take in all the information, be very quiet when everybody's chatting away. And then right at the correct moment, make the most scintillating point that will blow up everything and change the direction. So it's that active listening that we always talk about that makes such a difference. But you're talking about engineers who always get a bad rap for social skills, et cetera. But once you recognize somebody and appreciate where they are, the rapport changes and the acknowledgement. So that person filled in, it was like, it's almost like a science fiction experience the way you were talking, that he filled in his whole body and came forward because he was connected. He had something to say and he wanted to share it and he was energized. And that's the magic of doing that. And it's incredible what comes. And you usually, it's the person you least expect to do that that happens. And that's where we're looking at people connecting with each other. So we, as much as we like telling stories, the best stories are in the room. And I always say our job is to harvest them and allow them to happen and listen for cues and put people in a place that they can be there for each other. And then hopefully take that out of the room or rooms. But the thing I find about storytelling is no matter what your relationship with the individual, you're never going to look at them the same way again. You're going to remember and appreciate that you had a very unique moment and something important happened when you were both in the same situation together, whether it's that woman at the conference or it was that gentleman you were talking about or that engineer. It changes. I think all of those little pieces start to help build relationships and build trust. We're in these hybrids. We can't always be together and nor will we. And I think it's those moments we're looking to create. So when they are on a phone or things are getting agitated, they can know that that person has some substance and to build some trust and get things done. So I think there's a lot of opportunities with stories too and learning. So I am sure we have more to share.
Yes, agreed. And more to share. And what a great way to end too with you know, a sort of call to action for people to surprise themselves and be open to surprise. And even if you're not necessarily the person who tells stories, you know, as you listen to other people, listen for surprise, right? I mean, I think we're so used to certain relationships. What if you approached your next meeting with that kind of intention where like, oh yeah, I'm going to look to be surprised today and see what happens when you bring that kind of active listening, like you were referring, you know, it's you're bringing something out of other people when you listen. It's not just about the storytellers or the ones who take the mic, you know, every opportunity they get. And so, so I think this has been really a rich conversation. Great. Yes. More to be revealed.
Thank you.
Awesome. Wow.
For more information on the narrative listening and storytelling method and how it can help your business, go to narrative.com.